Well, good morning, church. It is good to see you, good to be with you. And if you are joining us online, we are thankful for your presence as well. I know it has been a busy week. Yesterday was particularly busy. We talked about the Out of the Darkness Walk, which is a fundraiser and to draw attention to suicide awareness and prevention. And it rained on us yesterday morning. And still a good crowd turned up, and they raised over $41,000 to put toward that endeavor. That was just a great, great thing. So thankful for the members of our congregation and community who worked to put that together. And then, it was good. It was a good thing. And then yesterday afternoon, you may have heard that Josh and Alana got married. This is not from the official wedding photographer, but I just thought it was a beautiful ceremony, and the setting was gorgeous, and Alana was beautiful, and Josh was okay, and it was just a really great time of celebration for that family. We're super proud for them and excited for Josh and Alana as they begin their new life together. And we talked about also the community gathering last night. It was at the football field. Again, it rained on us a little bit. I went. I might have been the only Church of Christ guy there. I'm not sure. But it was exciting. I am here to tell you, they prayed. There was like 30-some-odd people who prayed at different points. And Junior Baker put it together. Had a meeting ahead of time and said, you know, let's keep it all to about 2 minutes each. So we're not, most of those people are charismatic. They don't pray for 2 minutes. They didn't even get warmed up. And so I was talking with, and our charismatic brothers and sisters, I learned a couple of things. For one, their prayers are much more elaborate and they really get up and go. You got background music to kind of get you going. And I also learned Church of Christ people a lot better about keeping things on time. And so we talked about that and joked about that, but it was a great night. They prayed for you, and they prayed for our community, for our schools, for our government, for just everybody. It was a beautiful thing, time of worship and prayer. So if you were asked, someone was talking to you, and they said, you know, I've heard about some of these stories from Jesus, from the Bible, but what did Jesus look like? Like, what was his demeanor? What was his attitude? You might think of a few different ways that we would present Jesus and explain Jesus to them. We might say that Jesus was a brilliant teacher, right? That he taught all these crowds of people with patience and diligence and persuasiveness. Or you might think of Jesus' kindness and gentleness with children or with the outcasts of society, the poor, the lame, the blind. Or you might think about Jesus in all these different ways, but we don't often present Jesus as angry Jesus, right? About Jesus who is reprimanding people for their faithlessness or flipping over tables in the temple. And I couldn't find like a good picture of Jesus flipping over tables in the temple, so I got one of the new AI engines to generate a picture of Jesus flipping over tables in the temple. I don't know if this is exactly what it looked like. It's probably pretty close. The point is, when we think about Jesus, usually we don't think about him as someone who gets angry, who resorts to violent or parkour behavior. We usually think of him as someone who is tender, someone who is compassionate, someone who is an easygoing person, someone who wouldn't hurt a fly, we might even describe him as. So when we continue, as we continue this morning, our study through the Gospel of John, our reading for today, the passage that we're going to focus on today, seems like it's really out of character for Jesus. I mean, what was it that made Jesus do what he did this day in the temple? Why did he do it? And what was the purpose of it? And my prayer for us this morning is not only that we'll learn what Jesus did, if you're unfamiliar with the story, but why he did it. And what that means for you and me here today. Begins in John chapter 2, beginning at verse 13. It says, when it was almost time for the Jewish Passover, Jesus went up to Jerusalem. In the temple courts, he found people selling cattle and sheep and doves and others sitting at tables exchanging money. So he made a whip out of cords and drove them all from the temple courts, both sheep and cattle. And he scattered the coins of the money changers and overturned their tables. To those who sold doves, he said, "Get out of here. Stop turning my father's house into a market." And his disciples remembered that it's written, "Zeal for your house will consume me." So you and I, we read this story. We've got, you know, thousands of years and a half a world away of cultural separation. So it may be difficult for us to spot here what exactly is the problem. Hard for us to know exactly what has gone wrong in this scene that we get from Jesus' life. Now remember this, John's purpose. John is writing that we might believe Jesus is the Christ. And he told us, we talked about last week, how Jesus turned water into wine. That is, he was providing above and beyond abundant joy. That's one of the roles of the Messiah. What is Jesus, what is he telling us about Jesus here? How does this prove or show that Jesus is the Messiah? So it's nearly Passover time in Jerusalem. And that means that any Jewish person who could would be coming into the city to celebrate. And Jesus and his disciples were among those pilgrims who made the journey to Jerusalem to celebrate. This is one of the major Jewish feasts. And as a part of the Passover, they were required to sacrifice animals. Now, if you're traveling from a long distance, odds are you didn't bring an animal to sacrifice. It's just too difficult a journey. So you would travel to Jerusalem, and there were farmers and shepherds who would raise animals outside of Jerusalem specifically for this purpose. Like, that was their business, is they would raise the animals and have surplus animals so that pilgrims coming here to make their sacrifices, there's the animals already there. So if you're one of those who's a business type mind, you can see where this might lead. You're like, all these people are coming into town, and they're going to need to make sacrifices, and they can't bring the animals with them, so they're going to need to buy them somewhere. So let's just set up a space right here in the temple, on the temple's grounds, and let's just make it convenient to sell our animals to the people that way. I mean, we're right there. The sacrifice is right there, so we could make a killing doing things this way, right? We're meeting a need that people have, and besides, it's for a good cause. I mean, there's a lot of ways to justify what's going on here. Now, merchants, by the way, have been trying to get this arrangement for years. They've been going and asking, you know, hey, is there any way maybe we could just set up out here in the foyer? I mean, that's what you imagine it being like. The temple courts where they were, it's not in the temple proper. It's not in the holy place, the most holy place. It's outside in the courtyards where people gathered anyway. So let's just use those courtyards for this business, right? So they've been asking to do that for a long time, and it wasn't until Caiaphas, the high priest, who was high priest during Jesus' day, not long before this, he was the first one to approve it that we know of. So you have people selling oxen, sheep, and pigeons or doves, whatever people need to make their sacrifices. It was a great location if you were looking to make some money. And if that's not ridiculous enough, it gets better or worse depending on your perspective. Remember, people are coming from all over, and not everyone used the same currency. You've got different currencies in every kingdom, so people have different coinages, right? And you've got to present a certain weight, a certain type of offering in the temple. Within the temple, the only accepted currency was Tyrian currency. Not because it was particularly holy, not because the Tyrians had a great image of God on the coin or anything. They still had pagan imagery on their coins, but their coins were consistent and they were pure. So Tyrian currency was the best currency, and that was what you were required to make your temple offering with, was Tyrian currency. But wherever you're coming from, you likely don't have access to that. In fact, the people who lived in Jerusalem and lived in Palestine, in Judea, they didn't have access to that currency very often. So you had to trade out whatever you had for this specific coinage. Since you're doing your business in the temple and your money's not good there, you're going to need to get your stuff there. And so guess what? There's also money changers or bankers set up right there in the temple as well. Money changers, They are happy to convert whatever currency you have into the coin you need to make your offering to the temple for a small fee. Now, I don't know about you, but it sounds like to me there's a lot of money to be made in this whole enterprise, especially during a big feast day like Passover. So what is it that makes Jesus so upset that he does what he does? That he's driving people out about selling animals and he's turning over the tables? This is not the Jesus we're accustomed to seeing. And not only that, it seems like, I mean, on the surface, it seems like these people are providing a much-needed service. You need to make your offering. You need to make your sacrifice. You got to get it somewhere. So what's the big deal? Well, the key to understanding this is not so much what they're doing, but where they're doing it that makes Jesus particularly upset. The temple, as you may have learned at some point, is the place where God dwells in the midst of his people, right? In the Old Testament, before there was temple, there was the tabernacle. And as the Israelites were traveling through the wilderness, the tabernacle, the tent of the meeting was set up right in the midst of the camp. And then God's like, I'm going to dwell right in the middle of my people. And then and once that gets established later on down the line, David says, I want to build a temple. Solomon eventually builds it. And the presence of the God moves into the temple and moves in. It's associated with the Holy of Holies where the Ark of the Covenant is, right? And so right there in the midst of Jerusalem, there's where the presence of God is, his earthly dwelling, if you will. Now, we know God is not limited to one single space and time, but that was where they understood he inhabited. So if you wanted to draw near the presence of God, you come to the temple. The focus of what goes on in the temple is supposed to be on God, on what God has done for his people, specifically what God has done for you and for your people, and his ongoing presence with you, not just in the past, not just in the present, but his promise for the future as well. It's supposed to be for that reason that the Jewish people are coming to Jerusalem for Passover. They're remembering specifically the time when God delivered them out of slavery, out of Egyptian bondage, and brought them into the wilderness to make for himself a people. The covenant that he formed with them in the wilderness on Mount Sinai when the Ten Commandments were delivered down, right? And he led them into the promised land. That's what they're supposed to be there to commemorate. The focus is supposed to be on God and on his mighty acts in delivering his people. It was not supposed to be on making money. It was supposed to be on God's presence with his people to save them, not how much you can save on your next transaction. It was supposed to be about God's promise of deliverance that was coming in the promised Messiah. But right here in the temple courts, the focus is not there. It has nothing to do with what God has done for his people. His house has become a place for making money, for buying and selling and trading. The temple is a place to get rich. Now, this particular temple court, likely the court of the Gentiles, because it was much larger and it was the place where people gathered, was the court of the Gentiles. This was the only place in the entire temple complex that Gentiles could come to pray. So if you were not born Jewish, you weren't of a Jewish heritage, you could come, and that would be as near as you could get to God. So this was where you prayed. This was where you drew near to the presence of God himself. And so to give you some idea of what was going on when they came to pray to God, imagine that we had somebody set up right over here by these doors over here, and they were selling pigs this morning. And we got somebody set up over here, and they're selling horses. Back there by the sound booth, we got a banker, and he is doing some transactions, or maybe an ATM there by the nursery window. And then right up here up front, we've got somebody who's auctioning off cows. And you're trying to worship God. For Gentiles who came to Jerusalem for the Passover, that would be their experience of trying to draw near to God. You think it's hard to pay attention when somebody's cell phone goes off in church? You think it's hard to pay attention when the two-year-old is playing with trucks on down your row? Right? It would have been impossible to focus. It would have been so distracting. That's essentially what's going on when we're reading the gospel here. There's no way anyone who's in that courtyard is able to focus on anything but the business that's going on around them. So Jesus sees what's going on here. He sees that those who have come to worship God can't do so. By the way, in fulfillment of a promise, God said people from all over, people from everywhere are going to come to this place and they're going to worship me. God promised them that. And they now can't deliver. There are obstacles that God's own people have put in the way. And so Jesus is not going to allow anyone, even God's own people, to get in the way of God's presence. So he makes a whip out of cords, and he drives them out, those who are selling the animals, those who are changing the coins, the money lenders. He pours everything over and sort of makes a mess of the place. And people who are watching this, they're wondering, what's going on? Who is this guy, right? Jesus hasn't even started his public ministry here. This is Jesus' first public act of ministry. You ever think about that in John's gospel? He hasn't done a miracle that anybody knows about except for the disciples who were there to watch the water be turned into wine. He hasn't preached a sermon. He hasn't calmed any storms, raised any dead, healed any sick, none of that. This was Jesus' first act of public ministry, was flipping over tables in the temple. It's no wonder that his disciples later remembered that the promise made from the Psalms, zeal for your house will consume me, because that was the way Jesus appeared that day, zealous. They see Jesus as zealous towards people coming into his Father's presence, and Jesus is not going to stand for anyone, knowingly or unknowingly, standing in their way. So here we are this morning, and we gather and we look back and we were like, man, how could those people have gotten it so wrong? How could they not have understood the purpose of the temple? I mean, they built the temple. By the way, the temple was still under construction. Herod was adding on to and improving all this. It had been under construction for like 60 years. It took a while for big building projects back then, and it was going to be a while before it was done. But the temple was still under construction. It was becoming bigger, bolder, grander, more beautiful than ever before, dwarfing the temple that Solomon had originally built. So we have to ask, as they're seeing this bigness, this grandness, this construction project and all of the currency that's flowing through the doors of it, are there things that maybe we do today that even with the best of intentions might draw away attention from Christ's presence with us this morning, that draw away from the message of a crucified and risen Savior? Is our focus this morning on gathering around God's table and God's word and what Christ has done for us at the cross? Or are we in danger of letting our focus be on something else or someone else? Maybe there are some of you who don't like this sermon this morning. Certainly there's probably been better sermons preached in this pulpit. Maybe you don't like that the church was not entertaining enough this morning. Tommy sang too many old songs or too many new songs. I don't know. Or maybe you'd prefer that worship was done just a little different. Maybe more like the way you grew up, or maybe more like your friend's church down the road. But regardless of our motives, anytime we do anything to take the attention off of the presence of the living God in our midst this morning, we drive a wedge between the broken men and women who sit on this pew and the God who stands offering healing to them. People stand in desperate need for their brokenness to be mended. And when we think are more concerned with what we're wearing or the songs we're singing or what time lunch is supposed to be when we get done, when we draw our attention off of that in any way, we have to remember that it is not about us. It's not about the Jews. It wasn't about them making money or making it convenient. It was not, the problem was that it was all about them when it's all supposed to be all about Him. And God forgive us when we seek to make it about anything else but Him, because He is ultimately all we need. And this morning, my prayer for you and for I, is not only as we gather this morning, but as we go out this week, is that we may remember who it's all about and what it's all about, and that we may do our very best to remove the barriers between the broken and the mender, between those who want to worship and the one who desires to be worshiped. If we can pray for you this morning in any way, for healing, for forgiveness, or if you're ready to become a child of this God who heals and mends the broken, who offers forgiveness regardless, we want you to know that opportunity is ready for you this morning. Won't you come now as we stand and as we sing?